Welcome to Unraveling, a podcast which has been created to speak openly about the messy truths of life. I'm your host, Lauren Barber, and my intention for this podcast is to express my own real life experiences and that of my guests in a raw and authentic way. It has become a passion of mine to speak honestly and vulnerably about the ups and downs that many of us experience in this roller coaster ride of life. That means huge celebrations and earth-shattering rock bottoms. The reality is we feel and experience it all. Unraveling strips away layers of conditioning, shame, fear, and worry by opening up the conversation to talk about the subjects that are sometimes hidden away. This means you can expect total, open-hearted, truthful discussions about what it really is like to be a human being. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful, but sometimes chaotic, journey of unraveling. Now let's head to the show. Hello and welcome to the 33rd episode of Unraveling. I'm really, really honoured to share with you today's episode, which is with my very good friend, Katie Baker, who I met during my pregnancy, and very quickly we kind of became very close. We had a lot of common ground and we were actually both pregnant and expecting our babies within, I think, about a week of each other. So we shared a lot of laughter, fun, and also pregnancy supper clubs that Katie organized over in the summer in the area of Kent. So I'm just going to introduce Katie now before we join in with the show. Katie is a mum to Maggie, who is three, Jasper, who is two, and four-month-old Delphi. She also has a fur baby called Bear, who is now 10. Katie is a qualified KG hypnobirthing teacher, founder of The Birth Thing, and loves sharing knowledge of pregnancy, birth, and parenthood with parents-to-be in and around Tunbridge Wells. She proudly teaches the Yes Mum Birth Project, which is a modern take on hypnobirthing for every birth. She teaches groups, privates, and refresher courses, so there's something for everyone at whatever stage of their pregnancy. She is a big believer in all birth matters and that all birthing people matter, which is why she does what she does. She's also an empath and an overthinker and really believes in the power of human connection. She has created a beautiful community locally and also online as well through things like her pregnancy supper clubs. She's also a co-facilitator with the Tunbridge Wells Positive Birth Movement, and she is so passionate about sharing all things to do with birth, and I was just instantly magnetized to work with her as my hypnobirthing teacher, but also to as a friend as well. And we ended up collaborating in a supper club last year when we were both pregnant, where I got to guide some of the lovely guests through some yoga movements that would help them during pregnancy. And she shared her hypnobirthing magic. In this episode, we talk a lot about various stages of motherhood, pregnancy. We talk about hypnobirthing, dispel some of the myths around hypnobirthing. We talk about the transition from becoming a sort of independent solo person to becoming a mother, whether it's a mother of one, two, three, or more. We look at different perspectives in birth and pregnancy. We talk about how to support ourselves in the postpartum period in the fourth trimester and so much more. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. So let's get straight to the show. Hi, Katie. It's so amazing to have you on Unraveling. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. I am super excited to talk to you about whatever conversation comes up. Just for anybody that isn't aware of Katie yet, she will be after this episode. Katie was my hypnobirthing teacher, and we kind of, I don't know, just became good friends through the, well, we were sharing our pregnancy, I guess, in a way, because her little baby Delphi was born a week before Sophia. Was it a week or 10 days? About similar times anyway. So we kind of experienced pregnancy together. So I'd like to invite Katie on to talk about fourth trimester, postpartum, hypnobirthing, being a mother of three very small three very small children. So yeah, welcome, Katie.
Thanks. Hi, thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. I'd love to start just by inviting you to share a bit about your story so far. So, you know, what's brought you to this day in the world?
So I'm Katie. I'm a mum of three. I've got three very small ones, all aged three and under. My daughter is three. My son is two. He was born just 18 months after my daughter. And then Delphi is baby number three. And she is about 5 months old now. Yeah. So it's been all consuming, sort of 4 years of pregnancy and sort of transitioning into that kind of new period of life after being a quite a successful career-driven woman in all singing, all dancing, PR and publicity, to then sort of be wrenched out of that and placed into the hardest job that I feel like I've ever had in my whole entire life, which is motherhood.
Yeah, I hear you, and I've only got one.
Well, I think any number of kids, and people always say this to me, they're like, oh, they're almost apologetic that they've only got one or only got two. And they're like, well, you must know this because you're mum of three. And I'm like, well, every single baby is different. Every single time I've become a mum, and that's three times now, it's become a different challenge, it brings its own kind of unique set of experiences. And you have, you know, lots and lots to kind of deal with, but there's never a bigger transition than the transition from going from being yourself and your partner with kind of your own self to really look after, to then having a baby or, you know, babies that are wholly dependent and reliant on you. And that is just such a huge weight of responsibility. So I do feel like people need to stop saying, oh, you know, I've only got one, because it's massively impactful for your life, and it's a huge change, and it's a huge step change, and it's the biggest change in your whole entire life, I think, that you're ever gonna have.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Obviously, you know, I have only experienced having one so far. Yeah. But I would imagine, and I've said this, you know, before, that first, having your first baby must, you know, obviously having subsequent babies is a huge challenge in its own, but that first one is going from being that individual, being, you know, even if you're in partnership, you're still independent, you're still really on your own, to having this responsibility of this little being. Like, that transition was such a shock for me.
Yeah. It is, and it's a shock, and almost as amazing as it is, and we all have our own different unique journeys into kind of getting where we are, and you know, having children or becoming families, and in however that looks, is that, you know, it's a huge shock to the system. And at points throughout the kind of journey, you're going to start grieving your old self, mm-hmm. and your old sense of self and who you were. And, you know, it's one of these things that my house seems to be constantly full of stuff, like toys and bits to do with babies. And I find myself getting angry, or, you know, feeling like I'm out of control and there's a bit of chaos going around. And I have to sort of remind myself that this is good. This is something that I get to do. I get to look, you know, I get to sort out all of the toys and the toy box and all the stuffed animals. I get to choose which ones go to the charity shop if they're becoming a bit out of control. And, you know, it's, you just got to remind yourself of the why of why they're there in the first place. And then, you know, looking through old paperwork, I was looking back, you know, just back to, I don't know, scarily sort of 2010 or something, that I haven't managed to shred or get rid of. And there were really important documents in there from previous jobs and work, being like, congratulations, you've got a promotion to deputy director and your salary is going to be this and you're going to get this many benefits. And it's all very materialistic, but there's a sense of kudos and a sense of validation for who you are when you get these kind of letters of praise and, you know, appraisals, but you don't tend to get that in motherhood. Nobody stops you and goes, oh, well done, you're doing really well, you're going to get a bonus this Christmas, or you've been promoted and you've got this new title of Super Mum of the Year, and it just doesn't happen. And because you just get on with stuff on a day-to-day basis and you just do what you've got to do to get through to the end of the day, and then you start again the next day, you don't end up stopping and breathing, actually congratulating yourself and celebrating those small wins throughout the day with your children as well. And, you know, you may have a partner, you may not have a partner who works or doesn't work, but at some point, you know, they're going to come through the door and you're going to want to offload your day on them. And sometimes it can be less than ideal and less than, you know, kind. And just have to remind ourselves that, you know, we're sort of fortunate to be around our children as much as we are. And this time is very fleeting. And you can always go back to old life and old things if that's what you choose to do, and just to kind of enjoy being in this moment as much as possible. And it is, you know, and it really annoys me when people say to me, it goes past so quickly, these are the best days of your life, et cetera, because, you know, those days and those nights can seem endless, especially when you've got a screaming baby that you cannot seem to understand what their wants and needs are. But, you know, you just got to celebrate yourself. And if you're not getting told you're doing a great job, then tell yourself you're doing a great job on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think there is definitely a lot of, there's so many emotions and so many thoughts and so much comparison that goes on in your head, like, especially in those first, even through pregnancy, I was going to ask you, like, how do you feel, I found hypnobirthing amazing for my preparation. But also from an emotional point of view, you know, there's the practical things you can do to prepare yourself for birth. And it's funny because I think when it's your first, then there's such a big, like for me, I really needed to immerse myself in the planning, even though I knew that actually having a birth plan, you know, it wouldn't necessarily go to plan. And I was very open to the twists and turns of it. But actually for me I needed to feel like I was doing something in terms of preparing.
Having an active role in that preparation so that you don't feel like something's just about to happen to you. Mm. And almost like ticking things off a list. And I suppose that sort of depends on your personality. If you're anything like me, sort of a highly functioning, anxious person and who likes to get stuff done. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that I'm not worried about stuff and, you know, kind of worrying about things on a day-to-day basis. I definitely found that the birth preparation side of it allowed me to kind of go in as much with my eyes open as I could, knowing that it's different for everybody and everybody has different experiences. And I suppose it really kind of upsets me a little bit when people just really stick their head in the sand and they say, well, you know what, birth is going to happen like this. It's going to look like it does on this movie. There's going to be screaming, there's going to be blood, there's going to be gore, there's going to be partners fainting on the floor, and I can't do anything about that because that's just how it is. And, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. And actually that sort of portrayal that we have is perpetuated by the media around us. And if you don't take responsibility for the planning of your birth, then you're likely going to come out of it feeling like you know, it's something that just happened to you and you weren't in the driving seat, and that's where trauma can come from, right? So if you feel out of control in a situation, and birth is something that's so different for everybody and can have so many things that can happen, regardless of the preparation that you do, as long as you're feeling like you're empowered to make choices that feel right for you, your baby and your family, it doesn't matter how that looks, as long as you come away feeling like you were in control, you were supported, and that that nothing was taken away from you in terms of, oh, I wish I'd known I could have said that, or I wish I'd known I could have said this. And you know, that at the end of the day, that it's all about feeling empowered in order to have a positive experience rather than kind of a perfect one.
Absolutely. And I think for me, it was like hypnobirthing was part of my preparation, even though I think obviously I'll let you explain a bit more about hypnobirthing in a minute. But, you know, even though when it came to my birth, my labor, then I didn't suddenly go, oh, I'm going to switch on hypnobirthing, you know, sure. Now it wasn't like that. It was like, I think the whole build up and the fact that I'd done this, you know, I'd done it with my husband, and we'd had like that experience together, and we were both on the same page. We discussed a lot of the things, like what options there were and what choices we would make if we needed to. And just by having those conversations, I think even just from that point of view and understanding and being empowered as to, okay, well, this could happen and these are your options, because that's not what you get at your midwife appointment, or, you know, when you speak to a doctor, you don't get any of that told you. You just kind of get told this is what's happening. And it really helped me feel, I guess, in a time where there is so much uncertainty and you can't avoid the uncertainty. And in fact, I think that excited me for the first thing in my life. You know, it was the first thing that I haven't been able to control. Mm. And actually that was quite freeing for me. But to be able to put some things in place to make me feel like I was a bit more secure in that uncertainty and a bit more supported. It felt good.
That might be my coffee machine.
That's all right. You've got three kids. You need your coffee machine.
And then it's like on tap. It's like, yep, it's your next coffee reminder. It's coming on drip.
Amazing. So with that in mind, you know, having talked a bit about the hypnobirthing, can you first of all maybe dispel some of the myths about hypnobirthing and also talk about your journey to becoming a hypnobirthing teacher?
Sure. I think, you know, hypnobirthing is definitely something that's becoming more every day. When I was first started looking into kind of birth preparation when I fell pregnant with my daughter, however many years ago now, considering she's about 3 and a half, is that you either had the NCT or you had, you know, midwife sessions. And I didn't understand that there was other things that you could do until I started looking a bit more deeply. And then I discovered hypnobirthing via a friend who suggested it to me and said, you know, give this a go, because it really changed my birth experience for the better. And I really think that more women and more, you know, birthing people should have it available to them. So that was however many years ago, and it was a bit harder to find courses then, but I think it's become a lot more trendy now. Lots more people are aware of it, especially, you know, with the Duchess of Cambridge saying that she'd done it for three of her births. And I think the thing is that I don't really think that there's a difference between a hypnobirth and a birth. I think it's just birth, and, you know, it's called hypnobirthing, which essentially is a bit of a silly name for something that's really logical, based in science, and something that, you know, it is something that can empower you to have a positive experience with science and logic with a little bit of magic sprinkled in. And for me, the most empowering thing was understanding how my body is designed to give birth, right? And the physiology of birth at the end of the day, and the hormones and the muscles of the uterus, you know, not knowing that my uterus is, you know, not really functioned before giving birth and before being pregnant. So understanding how we can best kind of give that the best start in having a comfortable birth and an efficient birth of your baby. And it really isn't about pocket watches. It's not about clucking like chickens. It's about birth education and birth preparation and a box, right? So we'll take you through a syllabus in one of my courses, but then if I've kind of sparked your curiosity, then it's really up to the mum and the dad, or the, you know, the couple to, or if it's, you know, somebody birthing on their own, to go away and unpack more knowledge that feels right for them, like a Pandora's box of like little intricacies of knowledge and power, all to do with birth. It's, you can really dig quite deeply when it comes to finding out about the whole, you know, it's about navigating the maternity system as well, knowing that that is something that can come with its own challenges. And it's about empowering whoever is in your birth team to feel part of the process and not sort of rabbit in the headlights when it comes to baby's birthday, about who you can choose to support you on your team, about the environment and how that can affect your birthing body. Really looking at kind of primal instincts and trusting your gut when it comes to making decisions, and then giving you really useful tools to help you with that process. So it's the whole broad spectrum, rather than what most people come away thinking, oh, hypnobirthing, oh, that sounds a little bit hippy-dippy. Are we going to be chanting and holding people's hands? Which just isn't the case. It really is about getting yourself either in front of a teacher or opening a book, or there's online courses as well that can help you prepare for the birth that you want. And if you don't, you know, if there's twists and turns along the way, it's about giving you the tools to be able to navigate those with power and knowledge, rather than just saying, oh, well, this has happened, I'm going to, you know, throw the towel in now and just let a cascade of interventions come upon me. It's just about being all part of the process and empowered and trusting the process as well.
I found particularly when I had to have the oxytocin drip, because my labor would kind of, it was not progressing as much as it needed to at that time, and because I was exhausted. And I just found that having had the education about what that, you know, what that drip would do and how that would change my labor and what I needed to be prepared for, really helped me then take time. I didn't just go, oh, yep, fine, just give it to me. I took time. I made sure I asked for the doctor to come in to discuss my options. I spoke to my doula, Laura, about it. Me and Will had discussions and we made the decision to go ahead with it, but based on our like knowledge, rather than, oh God, like they're telling me to do something and I better do it. So I felt like, even though my labor went, you know, off on some, you know, lots of twists and turns, I felt like I could, at each time I had the knowledge to make a decision that felt empowered to me. And for some people, my birth might have been a complete, like, might have been traumatic because of the length of it and because of the, you know, that they didn't go as, you know, I had hoped for. But for me, I've still come away from that feeling like that's amazing. And actually, it's making, you know, now 4.5 months down the line, I'm like, I kind of want to experience it again, because there is an incredible power. I mean, not just yet. And if Will's listening, don't panic, but
very well.
But yeah, so I think just having that knowledge, and it doesn't, I think, you know, it doesn't have to, I'm not an overly sciencey person, but just having an element, just a small amount, just enough to know, and for Will to know as well, so that we could discuss things together, was really powerful for us.
And I think that's really important to say. It's not asking you to be a scientist or to be a doctor or to be the most, you know, informed person when it comes to all the things to do with giving birth. It's really not that complicated. And it's really more about understanding the things that can get in the way of the process, rather than, you know, saying, well, you need to be an expert in it in order to have a comfortable birth experience. And it's not about saying no drugs. It's not about saying you can't have epidurals. It's not about saying that if you have a cesarean birth or an abdominal birth, then that's not a hypnobirth. It's all birth, and it's just making sure that it's the most a positive version of that birth for you at that time, and then coming away from it feeling like it didn't just happen to you, and that, you know, as you just said, that you'd quite like to do it again if you get into. So it, you know, and that's really similar experience for me is that all three of my births have been different. They haven't been cut and paste. It's not been one size fits all. It's been very different. And my first birth, you know, which a lot of first time parents experience a more, you know, challenging birth, because you've never done it before and you have no idea what to expect in that situation when you go into labor, or, you know, you decide to have an elective cesarean or whatever. You just don't know what feelings are going to come up on that day, and how that's going to impact you. And I come away from my first birth experience, which was, you know, a pretty complicated hospital birth, going, that was probably one of my most empowering, because it was the one where we got to make the decisions as a team, and we really got to apply all the tools that we learned and all the techniques and all the knowledge that we learned in our birth prep to make really conscious and informed decisions that felt right for us at the time.
So really it's about having more tools in your toolkit for birth, but also, do you think for pregnancy and for beyond birth as well, like the hypnobirthing tools I've found to be really useful during pregnancy in terms of like helping my mindset during birth, but then also beyond as well, like a lot of the similar things, that even things like the breathing techniques and just having more tools really helped in postpartum as well?
I completely agree. And I don't necessarily think that it's just about the breathing and the mindfulness side of it, because I think that's obviously something that's really important in everyday life. And it just makes sense, right? If you're feeling under pressure and you're feeling anxious, then taking some conscious breaths and some time to breathe is going to calm, settle and quiet in your mind. But I just also think is that giving yourself the permission to ask lots of questions, and if something doesn't feel right, ask questions of caregivers, ask questions of doctors, of nurses or whoever is around you, to get answers that will make you, you know, feel better about a situation. And that's essentially it, really. It's about asking questions, being informed and getting information that's from a place of evidence-based research, rather than just jumping on the internet and googling things and getting yourself stuck down a rabbit hole of scary forums, and you've gone in thinking one thing and you come out thinking something's 100 times worse, and that's kind of can lead to the unraveling of kind of your emotional and physical well-being when it comes to motherhood, I think. And you touched upon it before as well, is this kind of sense of comparisonitis at the end of the day. You know, we're all comparing ourselves to other people and other versions of people's lives. And I think it really is about looking at yourself as an individual and your family as an individual unit, and applying things that are best for you and your unique set of circumstances, rather than just saying, well, it worked for that person, or that person had this experience, and applying it to yourself as well.
Mm, absolutely. And it is really hard not to compare. Like even now, I wouldn't, there's actually nothing I would change about my birth. I feel like it went exactly as it was supposed to do. I trusted all the way through pregnancy that Sophia knew how to be born, and I did, and her birth was exactly what she needed and what we needed. But I still find myself seeing, you know, when someone posts about like their perfect home birth or their perfect, 8-hour labor, doesn't seem to be any repercussions or anything, you know, like it's really hard not to have a moment. And I catch myself and I'm really aware of it, but there's still a tiny part of me that goes, oh, you know, like I'm not, you know, not that I failed, because I don't feel it as a failure, but there's like, oh, she got that and I didn't, kind of thing. Or I don't know if it's envy, or I don't know if it just makes me think, oh, what did I do wrong? Was there something I did wrong? You know, and I do catch myself, and I don't spiral into that. I don't go sort of buy into the story, but I do find I have, you know, especially at the beginning, not so much now, but right at the beginning, it was quite hard not to fall into that.
And I think that's absolutely fine that you're noticing that and you're acknowledging that. And it's just because you had this one idea in your mind that you thought it would look like, might look like, or a version of that, and it ended up being something that was completely different. So you have to be able to let go of that and embrace the what actually happened. And you may, you know, and we always tell ourselves that we shouldn't compare ourselves to other people on the internet, but it's really, really hard. But who's to say that, you know, that what they're posting is the perfect birth? There isn't this perfect birth. I'm sure that whoever, you know, even the most seemingly perfect looking birth, and I hate using this word perfect because, again, there's no such thing, it's more about a positive birth, didn't have its own twists and different things that that person had to navigate in order to achieve that birth as well. So we have no idea what that person's gone through antenatally. We have no idea what that person has even gone through to get pregnant in the first place. And then we have no real insight into what their experience is postnatally as well. And I just think it's unfair on ourselves to keep looking at other people's projections of their reality and trying to say that we in any way have failed some of our own when we haven't. And the things that happen to us make us who we are today and make our children who we are today. And I will always say that my daughter was never going to give me the most straight, my oldest daughter, Maggie, was never going to give me the most straightforward birth, knowing her personality now, because she's the most sassy, spirited little three-nager you've ever met in your entire life. And of course she wouldn't have just come if I'd sneezed her out in my living room. It's not going to happen like that, because she's always keeping me on my toes. But that's what makes her, and that's what makes her unique. And I love the differences that we had to overcome in order to bring her safely into the world was something that my partner and I negotiated and did together. And I look upon that experience in just a positive way, if not even more so positive way than my other two births, which were a home birth. You know, Jasper was born on New Year's Eve, fireworks going off in the background, in the pool, in my living room. But then we ended up being transferred into hospital, and that part of the birth looked completely different as well. And then, you know, I kept an open mind for Delphi's birth, knowing that all things can change. And it just turned out that that ended up being the most straightforward of births. But it took a lot of work to get to that point, and a lot of releasing of fears and a lot of releasing of worries and concerns that I'd accumulated following the births of my previous children, in order to come to peace with, yeah, it could look like this or it could look like this. And that's what I say, is like, visualize what you want your birth to look like. Write that down, and by all means keep focusing on that, but also have a version B, a version C, a version D, a version E, a version F, because at no point do you want to think that you've failed in any way, because you haven't.
Yeah, and I think what you were saying about, you know, Maggie's birth was exactly reflective of her. That speaks so much to me about Sophia, because I, you know, she's been feisty from day one, and she's also totally made up her own rules. And of course she was never going to conform to my plans, because, you know, everything about her conception and her, my pregnancy and, like, you know, her arrival, her timing was not as expected. So, you know, when you think about that, I wouldn't want it to be any different, because I love her personality. And already, you know, at 4.5 months, she's already showing me that side of her. And yes, it might be challenging because it's testing me. But I think one of the things I've definitely found is she is, without doubt, from the minute that I knew of her presence, from the minute I found out I was pregnant, she has been my biggest teacher so far. And she, you know, in Every element of my life, my lessons are to surrender and to trust, to surrender and to trust. And she is now reiterating that 100 times in every single element of the birth, the pregnancy, and now, you know, in my day-to-day life. She doesn't conform to, you know, the set plans that I might like to make. And so I'm having to learn to be totally, you know, in the flow of it. And that's really hard for me, but also an amazing gift for her to give me.
I completely agree. And I think that's the same for all children, really, isn't it? Is that they are our biggest teachers, and we might want them to fit into a version of our lives and tick these boxes, but actually they don't come out into the world knowing what our expectations are of them. And they are sent to try us, and they are sent to, you know, completely overtake anything else that is happening in our lives at that moment in time. And if it was all very, very easy, we'd all be sort of lemmings, wouldn't we? We'd all be very, very the samey. There'd be no nuances, then there'd be no different personalities. And I do think that the way children are brought into this world, you know, is also reflective of that as well. On the other hand, you'll get people say, oh, if you do hypnobirthing, you're going to have a really calm baby. And that fills me with a bit of concern, because it's almost like you're selling a false dream, right? It's saying that, and if your baby isn't brought into the world in this kind of listening to Enya music and well music and lots of Josh sticks being, you know, wafted around, then you're going to have a more challenging baby. And I don't think that's fair to pigeonhole children based on the births that they have either. I think that it's more about how you as a parent are feeling, and that is what's going to shape and mold your children around you, because they're going to feed off you as a mother rather than how you gave birth. And if you come away from your birth experience feeling that you were in control, or that it was a positive experience, you're going to go into motherhood in a better place mentally and emotionally, in order to kind of then deal with the challenges that motherhood and parenthood throw at you as well. And yeah, I just don't think it's fair to say that this birth means that you are, as a child, are going to be this, because it's just not going to happen. It's all about the, you know, the unit and the people around them as they're going through their little lives.
Yeah, I have this slightly woo-woo theory. You know me, I like a little bit of woo-woo. And I have this theory that, like, the younger years, like the baby years of our children, are basically like teaching us as parents or as mothers or as fathers, as you know, to basically deal with all our shit. And in order for us to turn into the parents that can support them in their mission, you know, like I think these souls come in with a mission, and they basically have to teach us to be the people that they need to nurture them to be able to fulfill their mission. And that might sound a bit out there, but that's just what I've been thinking about that quite a lot recently, because it's Sophia is like mirroring every part of my healing that I need to do at the moment. And it's intense. Like, it is like this huge transformative period in our life. And I don't think it's just around motherhood. I think there are other parts of growing up, being a woman, particularly different rites of passage that do show us these things. But this is the one I'm in at the moment. And it's certainly been the most powerful for me so far. And I think that she is showing me every area that I need to heal, to witness, to love, to come into relationship with and to integrate, so that
she's acting as your mirror at the end of the day.
Yeah, she is. She's my little mirror.
She's your little mirror. And I think that's a really nice way of looking at it, isn't it? Because our children, they're going to be the ones that mean that we're going to prioritize them, right? So if they're showing us things that they think we need to work on from our own selves in order to, you know, to grow, then we're going to listen quite intently to that. Whereas if, you know, you've got nagging and it's just coming from your own kind of self, you may not put that to the top of your priorities because we tend to not prioritize ourselves. But if somebody, you know, little characters around you are holding up the mirror to yourself, you're going to act upon it a lot more kind of quickly than sort of doing it for yourself.
Yeah, and I think I wonder if that's why the fourth trimester and beyond and motherhood particularly can be such a struggle for people, because some of that healing that we need to do is really deep. Yeah. It's really intense. And it can feel like, sometimes it can feel like I don't want to go down into this because I need to keep myself strong to look after my children, or to, you know, to be supportive of my family, because there's this almost fear of like what would happen if you go into that. But then if we don't go into that, then it suppresses and it kind of, it comes back in later life, I think. So I'd love to know, like, I mean, it's just a conversation I'd like to have, I guess, is just in terms of preparation, obviously there's the practical things and there's hypnobirthing and things like that, but in pregnancy or even before pregnancy, like, how do you feel like someone can really truly prepare themselves to make that transition from being that individual, if you want to look at it in archetypes, being that maiden, and then moving into motherhood and moving into motherhood, like fully allowing motherhood, I think is probably the right way to describe it, because I think there's a lot of resistance to giving up certain things, or feeling like you're making sacrifices when you don't necessarily want to, and feeling like you've lost a part of yourself. Like, how do you find, how have you navigated that transition?
I mean, it's been really hard. It's been something that I always touch upon, preparing for kind of fourth trimester and beyond, because I also, you know, having recently come out of the fourth trimester, which is the 3 months after giving birth, I feel like, well, can we have a fifth trimester and a sixth trimester, because I think it's something that's ongoing. And I also feel like by naming something the fourth trimester means that, you know, 3 months postpartum, there's a sense that you should be having your shit together, and I don't think that's fair, and a fair pressure to put on ourselves. And it's something that's going to continue to evolve and grow and change as motherhood goes on for weeks, months and years following the postpartum period. But I always say in my antenatal classes, let's have a little look forward to that postpartum period. And it's one of those things, as first time parents, it is really hard to get parents to prioritize that, because it's all focused on the now, and it's all focused on the getting through the birth bit at the end of the day. Whereas I think there's real value in dedicating real space and time and energy into having a think about what that might look like for you, based on your coping mechanisms and strategies and how you are, your relationship, etc., because everything that comes in the postpartum period is going to have a huge impact on all of that. So if that's not in a strong and healthy place, then, you know, throw in a screaming, demanding baby and it may start to kind of unravel you even more. So I do think that building strong foundations for the postpartum, postnatal period is really strong. And it's one of those things though, isn't it? It's kind of, you don't know you need it until you need it. And as long as you are knowing where your network is, knowing where your village is, and I laugh when I say village because, you know, it's lovely. It's an ideal situation that we all have sisters and mothers and circle of friends around us. But at the same time, we all lead very individual lives. You know, you could have, I've got an amazing neighbour who's got three children really similar ages to me, and we don't see each other for months because we're literally living our own little microcosms of lives, and that's because, not for the sake of trying, it's just that life goes by really quickly, and when you're in it, you feel like you're kind of in it, and you have no kind of way to tread water and get to even go out the door and see, you know, people a few steps down the road from you. So it takes real effort to build that network around yourself. But once you do have it, you'll be astonished at the number of people that are out there to help and support you and guide you and offer, you know, emotional and physical support to you, as well as expert knowledge to help you in that process. More often than not, for absolutely nothing, just because it makes them feel good to know that they're imparting knowledge and helping you get through the most transitional time of your life. But, you know, it's one of those things that, as I said, you look upon the postnatal period when you're preparing for birth with rose-tinted glasses and go, I know that this person had a difficult time transitioning to motherhood, but, you know, I'm all right. It's not going to be me, and you know, stiff upper lip, keep calm and carry on type mentality. And I think if we could all be a little bit more open and honest with each other, and also open and honest when we're kind of describing our experiences of motherhood with each other, and it's not this perfectly polished scenario that you may see, you know, read in books, and it is forever changing, then we're setting realistic expectations for future generations of mothers all around us, and hopefully taking off some of the pressure to conform to this perfect image that doesn't exist of motherhood.
Yeah, and I think obviously we don't live in those villages anymore, or not many of us do, but I found I think in preparation as well, like that was one of the things I was really felt really secure in going into the fourth trimester, into postpartum, knowing that I did have that kind of modern equivalent of a village. And I have to admit, it is predominantly online. And that's one of the beauties of online. You know, there's lots of things we can moan about a bit about it.
Yeah.
But there's also, for me, like I feel like there's a lot of my village is come from people connecting online and being able to, I don't know, WhatsApp voice note someone in the middle of the night, or, you know, my NCT group has been incredible for support. And I really do agree with you in that, like, we need to be having honest conversations about what motherhood looks like, what birth is like, what pregnancy is like, because it's almost like this sort of like secret that's kept. And then, but that doesn't, I think there is an element of like wanting to protect people from feeling fear around birth, because, you know, let's be honest, it's the most intense thing.
It's probably daunting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's also like an element of like of needing to be honest about it, because yes, it's the most challenging thing probably most people will do in their lives, but it's also the most empowering thing. So it's like, just because it's not easy doesn't mean it's not the most incredible thing that we could do. And so it's like trying to keep that balance of, it's really, really intense. I mean, intense is the word I use. And I keep the word that keeps coming up for me at the moment is also initiation. Like that first couple of weeks I felt after birth was literally like the initiation. And I had a choice to either completely let it happen or fight it, and I just let it happen. And I feel like probably knowing that I had that virtual village around me enabled me to do that, to kind of completely like unravel.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, a lot of my relationships throughout motherhood have been made online. They are the people that you can, you know, shout out to 3 a.m. club in the middle of the night during those night feeds when it can feel like the loneliest time in the world. And just to know that other women out there are kind of, or parents, or, you know, men out there are going through similar circumstances makes you feel a lot less alone. And it's kind of, it's like an affirmation that got me through birth. One of them was, you know, women around the world are birthing with me, and knowing that there are other people going through similar circumstances or powering through this huge thing at the same time kind of got me through it. And it's the same with those kind of the depths of darkness in the night, when you feel like it's never ending, and to know that other people are there if you need them to chat to and have a little strike up a conversation is really, really reassuring.
Absolutely. So in terms of like your fourth trimester, what words would you use to describe fourth trimester in terms of maybe even that it might have been different for every baby?
Yeah, I really think that my fourth trimester has been really different for each baby. I think first time around, I had these expectations of what it was going to look like. And I thought that, you know, I had prepared as much as I possibly could from a birth education perspective, and I prepared from a material perspective. I bought all the bits that, you know, you're told you need to buy. I don't feel like I really prepared for it in a mental well-being way. I think it was something that completely almost picked me up from one place and threw me into another.
Do you think it's even possible to prepare for that though? Because that's what I'm questioning. It's like, I don't know what you could do to prepare. I think have a dog.
Well, I think this is one thing. As I did have a dog, actually.
Same thing.
I do agree with you. If you've got responsibility for something before you become a mother, that's a really good way of preparing for you not kind of being just looking after yourself. If you know that, you know, if you go out on a night out and you have to get home to let the dog out for a week, then that is a good preparation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, even though, yeah. I mean, obviously not relating my child to a dog.
No, I know, but it is that sense of looking and caring for something, another being, another physical being that is, you know, dependent upon you. You know, animals living in your house can't feed themselves, so they have to be looked after. But I think again it's opening up the conversation, I think, and it's more about signposting and having those resources there to tap into as and when you need it, and allowing yourself the space and time in order to do that, and prioritizing that, right? And not going, oh well, I know that I am struggling with this aspect of motherhood, but I'm just going to keep punching through because it'll eventually go away. And if it's something that's really eating away at you, knowing that there are experts out there who can support you and who are beautifully trained in that side of support to help, you know, help guide you out of that space that you may find yourself in. You know, there are experts there that can help you with early parenting. And I do think that it's not about your baby should be doing this. And, you know, if it's not doing this, then it's, you know, not developing at the right stage. It's more about people supporting you and looking at it holistically and from an individual perspective, rather than going, oh, if your baby isn't eating at this time, sleeping at these times, then you're not doing it right. It's about saying, well, how do you feel about this? How are you getting on? Is there any things that we can be doing to help support you to, you know, give you more time for yourself, or, you know, even if it's 5 minutes to have a shower in the morning, just the little quick wins that can help you to feel like you are not just surviving, but parts of you are starting to thrive again as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the word that I would use for postpartum is relentless.
Oh yeah, it is. It's like, and sometimes Groundhog Day, right? Yeah. It's like Groundhog Day where nothing is the same.
Yeah, because you kind of want it to be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can, so that you can get into some kind of routine, but it's not the same, but yet it sort of feels
like
the same.
The ungroundhoggiest groundhog day.
Absolutely, 100%.
But, you know, all three of mine are really different because I obviously had the transition from me to me and the baby who was, you know, dependent upon me first time around. Second time around, I had the guilt that came with, I've had this one baby that I've been, you know, their entire world for the past 18 months, and also I'm throwing in a baby brother to this little girl who's got only ever had me and her dad, and that guilt that came with that was like, oh my god, I need to feed this baby, but now I need to look after the toddler, and the toddler's not getting enough attention, and that's the mum guilt that comes with that, and figuring out how to cope with two. And then for the third, it's like, well, everybody says that the third baby just fits in. Well, that's assuming that third baby is a robot, right? And it's not. She's her own little being herself. She's got her own personality and needs, and she's a baby at the end of the day. It's not like saying just because you've got three, you're used to it and you know exactly what's coming. It's all completely different, and I think that's what I've been more open to this time is throwing myself open to know that it is hard and it can be different, and there's going to be different challenges that you need to overcome, but more knowing that having realistic expectations on newborn behavior, I think, is probably the most reassuring thing that I've had this time around, and just leaning into that a little bit more and leaning into the fact that babies aren't born on a schedule. Babies aren't born to know that they have to fit into this certain life. Babies are babies at the end of the day. And actually, if we try and fit a little bit into their lives a little bit more, rather than trying to fit them into ours, it can take this pressure off, you know, of this is what family life should look like. And just being a little bit more organic about it, I think.
Yeah, I think just like, again, I've kept coming back to trusting her to guide me, because I think, you know, I've spent like over this last 4.5 months, and I'm not an expert in any shape or form, and I never will be, but I have tried to, you know, find solutions. I've tried to be like, should I be putting her into a sleep routine? Should I try this? Should I try that? Should I persevere with this? And like, there was a couple of weeks where I was so adamant, like I was supposed to get her into a sleep routine and like a nap routine, that I literally was miserable and she was miserable. And I was trying to force her into this pattern. And I was like, oh, she's, you know, she wakes up, she wants to go to sleep an hour and a half, maybe even sooner after she's woken up. But this program says that at this time, they're supposed to be awake for 2 hours. So I'm going to fight to keep her awake, make her miserable, make me miserable. And then if she doesn't sleep for the exact amount of time, then I'm going to stress out. And I went through a couple of weeks of completely like being in turmoil over it. And then I was just like, it was talking to other mums actually that helped me just say, you know what? They're going to put themselves in their own routine. Yeah. And I suddenly was like, yeah, I just need to trust her. And sure enough, she is. But then, you know, today she threw in a complete random hour and a half nap this morning when she usually does half an hour.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think my mantra has just that I've just kept coming back to this time around is, when I mother my own way, I mother my best way. And I think that is my mantra that I would give to any kind of new mum, is that you are going to have lots of opinions. You're going to have lots of advice. You're going to have lots of shoulda, woulda, couldas. But at the end of the day, it's trusting your baby and trusting your instinct, your mothering instinct, and knowing that, you know, it really is about leaning into this time of your life. And yeah, there's lots of different bits and bobs that you can take from lots of people. But if you put it into the mix and come up with your own mixture, you're gonna come up with the perfect kind of recipe for you and your baby at the end of the day, and nobody else nobody else is an expert in themselves or your baby. It's kind of you. You're the one that's living and breathing them 24/7.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the stress in when, you know, I specifically probably early on in motherhood is that society celebrates productivity and busyness, right? And when you are looking after a baby, you know, if you solely focus your energy on that baby and on you and them being together, and you know, you do kind of allow yourself to be there for their needs, if you solely focus on that, then the stress isn't there. If you try and do all the other things that you were doing before in exactly the same way, if you try and basically pick up like back where you left off, so if you try and make sure the house is spotless, and if you try and do all the work that you were trying to do, and you try and, you know, when you do that, then it becomes stressful, then it becomes this like push pull, then there's the guilt because you're not doing anything properly. And I think if we as women, as mothers, could give ourselves permission to actually let go of that part of us, and that's part of the grieving process, right? That's part of the transition, to let go of the part of us that society says is all shiny because we can do all this stuff, you know, oh, I can run my own business and I can raise children, and there's no, you know, of course you can, but you have to be flexible in it. It's not, you can't just be exactly the same person with a baby. And I think that's a big, I think there's a lot of resistance to that because it feels like you're a failure if you can't be the same person. But actually, I don't want to be the same person.
No, we are different people, right?
You can't not be different.
No, there's nothing more kind of life-changing than becoming a parent. It's incredible, but also it's tough. And we've not done it before. And even if we have done it before, it's different again because it comes with its own set of challenges and logistics and all sorts of things that you have to kind of navigate. But if we strip it back and strip it right back to kind of it being just you and your baby at the end of the day, then I think if we try and eradicate some of the noise around us, it can be a lot more enjoyable and a lot more just fluid at the end of the day. And I think fluidity is something that is underrated, because just being, we're human beings at the end of the day, not human doings. And we're being told that we have to fit into this very linear life kind of style. Well, actually, no, it's cyclical and it's ever changing and it's ever growing. And just leaning into that, I think, is a really nice thing to do when you become a mother, and just letting all this stuff that we should be doing just sit for a while, and or let somebody else take control of that, which allows you to be present and allows you to be in the moment with your baby.
Yeah, and I think that there is, I think one of the things that maybe we're missing in society in terms of the transition, the initiation to motherhood, is actually instead of seeing it as like a kind of, I don't know, like more of a like letting being forced into a situation, is actually a really amazing opportunity to strip back all the shit that you don't want to take with you into this new version of yourself. It is the rebirth. It is this chance to like effectively wipe the slate clean and decide from an aligned place how you want to live your life. How do you want to show up? What do you want to do in your work? How do you want to be in your mother, in your mothering? How do you want to be in your relationships? It's actually this, when we tune into the power of it, it's like a portal of transformation. And if we allow it and we allow ourselves to completely effectively like strip everything back and rebuild again, like there's an element of letting that happen, but then making conscious choices to say, okay, I want to rebuild in this way. Like I want to work in this way if I want to work at all. I don't want to work, you know, like whatever you choose, but there is this opportunity to rebuild ourselves.
I agree. And, you know, as well, by rebuilding ourselves and kind of seeing the thing, taking the things in life that we want and trying to let go of the stuff that we don't, that's a really good role model to be for your children as well, isn't it? It's kind of saying that be your truest form of yourself, and if you're that, then anything else is just frosting. And if you're kind and you're compassionate and you are good people, then all of the other stuff that's around you is just materialistic. And we just do live in this world that is driven by consumerism and stuff and having all the things. And I think that motherhood in its rawest form is an opportunity to really strip all of that back. And even, you know, if, for example, if you've got a baby that's really fractious, however, you know, just jumping in the bath with it skin to skin, both stripping yourselves off naked and just having a cuddle can be the most grounding thing that you can do with that being. And there's nothing quite as, you know, eye-opening as that, is that we're told to buy all of these white noise machines, we're told to buy these things that rock the prams, we're told to put them in a swaddle, when actually sometimes just stripping, both of you stripping off naked, can be the most, you know, calming of influences on each other. And I think that's quite a nice way of looking at it.
Yeah, you don't need all the stuff. I mean, it's nice to have nice stuff, right?
I'm not saying I don't. I mean, you should see my cupboards. I've got so much stuff. It's coming out of every orifice of my house. But I think it's just an opportunity to just try and be a little bit more simple, the simple things in life.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed like the most, you know, the most content Sophia is when I'm literally sitting there just staring into her eyes. Like I do the whole, I don't know if it's weird and creepy for her, but you know, I do the whole eye gazing thing with her because I feel like she sees me for my truest self. She like looks at me with such unconditional love, and I am the same back to her. And like that simplicity, like that's better than any toys, any gadgets. We get out in nature. I haven't done any sensory classes because we go walking every day. And I'm not saying I wouldn't do them, but there's so much out there that, you know, we don't have to get caught up in, I have to do all this with my child or I'm failing as a mother. It's another mum guilt thing, right?
I totally agree. And, you know, even before Maggie, my first daughter, was my first baby was born, I'd almost signed her up to every single class there was in my town before she was even, you know, out of utero. And I found that once I'd done that, when I was in motherhood, I was like, F. Like, oh my God.
I swear it's fine.
I was like, fuck, like, I don't want to go out of my house to go to all of these things. This is so much pressure, but I've spent all this money. I mean, no 6-week-old baby really needs to learn how to swim. I mean, come on. It really doesn't need to know life-saving skills in the water at 6 weeks old. It just wants you. Mm. It wants to be around you, and it wants you in your most least stressed version of you as well. And adding all of these things in to think because that's what you have to do can be quite disrupting for both of you. That's not to say that some people love taking their babies out. You know, it's the way of them getting into the outside world, and that's fantastic as well. I think it's just about picking and choosing. And then if at any point something's saying for you not to go to something, then just don't go to it. You know, there's nothing worse than both of you getting stressed to go out to the door and arriving and being, you know, flustered, and neither of you are going to enjoy that. So I think it's just about being in the moment. And as you say, staring into your baby's eyes, there's nothing more beautiful than that. And unfortunately, we spend a lot of time, you know, putting barriers between that, screens or, you know, or other stuff. And we don't look into each other's eyes. And I think it can be quite a beautiful thing to do. And even, you know, looking into your, if you've got one, into your partner's eyes, you know, I can't remember the last time I literally with my husband was like, right, let's just sit in front of each other and just look at each other and just notice each other and be with each other, because there's always something that's going on or something that needs to be done, and we start to not notice each other, and I think that can be quite damaging as well.
Yeah, I think the whole relationship side of things in when you've had a baby is a whole nother conversation. Yeah, probably.
I completely agree, and it changes, you know, all throughout the entire, you know, as babies get older, it all completely changes as you add more children to your family. It's something that is a roller coaster in itself, let alone without another being to look after.
Yeah, but then again, I guess it's like not trying to be who you were before and actually embracing the new versions of yourselves, because neither of you are different. Neither of you are the same. No. You know, we both, you know, there's no way you can go back to that. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't mean that you've lost it. No. You know, it doesn't mean that it's a negative. Like, actually, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, you know, sex after birth doesn't have to, yeah, okay, it's not going to be the same as it was before, but it could be even better, because it's an opportunity to explore yourself again, to explore your body, your partner's body. Like, it can be a whole new experience, and it probably will be even better, because you can actually experience each other in a different way, in a different format. So, like, there's all this pressure of you won't get back to how you used to be, and actually I don't want to be how I used to be.
Well, you're never going to be who you used to be.
So exactly, so it's like embracing
impossible, isn't it? It's you need to move, you've always got to keep moving forwards rather than looking back. And I think that's the same with babies, is just because they did one thing yesterday doesn't mean that they're going to do it today.
Yeah.
And there's all this talk about regressions and this and that the other, and actually if we try and look upon it as more like development and something changing in their minds that is making them doing different things, then I think it's a more positive way of framing it, rather than saying they're moving backwards from where they are. I mean, they're tiny, they're little, they don't know that, you know, they need to be sleeping 12 hours a night. I mean, do you sleep 12 hours a night? I mean, do you? No.
I wish.
I can't remember the last time I got 12 hours a night sleep. But even, you know, pre-babies, I'd be getting up to go for a wee. I'd be getting up to go and have a drink. And I think that we need to just put realistic expectations on our children, knowing that, you know, they are little beings and not doings as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think in order for us to embrace the new versions of ourselves, like, there is an element of grieving, and there's actually, and it's okay to be sad for the person that you were before without not, you know, you, it doesn't mean you aren't grateful for what you have, and it doesn't mean that you don't want to have what you've got, but you can still feel sadness for the fact that you're not, it's not just about pre-baby, you know, last year, it's actually like 10 years ago, it's like still a part of me. Like, I look back and I think, oh, you know, yeah, I, like, so much fun. I got to do this.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean I want to be that person, but I can still feel sad about the fact, or I can still feel that, you know, I allow myself to grieve the person I used to be.
But you also look at it with rose tinted glasses, don't you? You look at it as this thing, you don't actually dig a little bit deeper and go, oh, but there was all of this shit that was going on at the same time. You just see the good stuff, don't you?
And
you,
that's very true,
find for the good stuff, and you don't necessarily look at the not so great bits that were going on at the same time.
Yeah, it's very easy to see everything through rose tinted glasses, especially when you're tired.
nothing. No, I find that I've lost the ability to have proper conversations.
I'm doing all right today.
Well, I hope so, but literally some of the most simplest of words, I'm like, what is that word? I was with a mum friend yesterday, and we were trying to remember the name. We were giving each other Netflix recommendations, a box set recommendation, and I was like, yeah, okay, that was really good, but have you watched them? I was like, I can't remember the word. And she's like, how am I supposed to know what you're saying to me if you can't even describe what it is that I should be? And it was the most pointless conversation that you've ever had, and if you were a fly on the wall, you'd have been going, what are those two women talking about? They've actually lost their minds. But it is the sleep deprivation.
And also I refer to everybody, like, I refer to myself now in the third person. Like, I'm like, mummy's going to do this now. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah.
It's like, and daddy isn't Will anymore. It's daddy.
Yeah. I know, right? And that doesn't change.
Daddy's going to work now.
My husband's name is. It's really funny. I was like, what's your name? It's Chris. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Well, okay. I just have one last question to ask you. And this is a question I ask all of my guests. And I'd just love to know, what is a messy truth that you are currently unraveling?
Oh my gosh. What is a messy truth? I mean, I would love to refer to the the absolute messy nappy that I just had to deal with just before this call, but that's probably not what you mean. But I think my messy truth now is that having to come understand what's going to be my next episode once all the baby years are past and what that looks like to me, having, you know, had babies quite close together and being that's all consuming. My job is around, you know, preparing for birth and babies and pregnancy. I've had this around me for the last 4 or so years, is understanding who I am without all of that, taking that away, and how I'm going to sit comfortably with Delphi being my last baby, and moving forwards from that, rather than, you know, going, oh, I missed those baby days, let's have another. It's actually what life looks like in a few years time without a little tiny baby. As we all kind of grow as a family, we get to know each other again, getting to know my husband again, you know, really starting to enjoy each other again, and not kind of feeling like we're giving ourselves away all the time to our children and giving some time to each other, I think it's really important. And it's something that I'm probably not spending enough time really thinking about at the moment, but I haven't really got that much headspace to think about it.
And there's also an element of trusting that everything's going to unfold as it's supposed to.
I completely agree. And that's it, right? It's kind of, you can't really plan for it, because there's going to be lots of things that have grown into the mix throughout that unraveling process, aren't there? And as I say, it's just trusting that we've got to this point that we are at, and trying to enjoy it, right? Mm. And trying not to rush things too much, and trying not to get to the holiday that we've booked, or get to this weekend away that we've booked, and actually trying to be a little bit more in the moment and enjoy that, rather than always constantly running and trying to chase something else.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing your messy truth. And I'm sure it's something that a lot of people can identify with, that sort of, who am I now? You know, there's these phases in our life, and, you know, when one phase comes to a close, then it's like, what's next? And there's almost that kind of in-between period, and I guess you're probably there at the moment.
I'm totally there. And, you know, lots of people are apologetic about, I this could be a whole new subject of conversation, is apologetic for being a mum. You know, so what do you do? Oh, I'm just a mum. Well, actually, there's no just that should go in there. You're a mum, and not only that, you're probably 100 other jobs at the same time, and there's absolutely no apologies necessary for being one of the, you know, the greatest things that you can be at that point in your life. There's nothing greater for me than being a mum. Everything else is just kind of white noise.
Well, if anybody would like to connect with you, where's the best places to find you? Because you share lots of amazing truthful words on social.
So I obviously, you know, Instagram is somewhere that I spend a bit of time. I try not to spend too much time on there, as you know, it can lead to all sorts of other things and comparisonitis and things. But I have my more birthy stuff that's on my @thebirthing account, and then I show kind of snippets of my family life on my more personal account, which is @MrsKatieBaker. And then obviously kind of Facebook. We've got a mum hub that I've set up for kind of new, not so new mums on Facebook, the Birthing Mum Hub, which everyone's welcome to join as well. And it's just, yeah, I'm very social, and I would hope to always kind of respond to people as and when they contact me, because I think it's important.
Yeah, and you have been like instrumental in my like virtual village. So,
well, right back at you. No, it's amazing to kind of have been around you on your journey as well, and your strength that you've shown and your courage through all the kind of undulations of that journey. And it just reminds me of kind of exactly where the challenges that I've been through as well, and it just goes to show that we all experience really similar things.
Well, it's been an honor to share the journey with you and to share this episode,
and to many journeys ahead, I'm sure.
Oh, I have no doubt. I think we'll be having many more conversations.
We need a journey to the pub soon.
Yes, I think maybe a glass of wine perhaps, yeah. Or a cocktail. Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us today. And yeah, I'll put all your links in the show notes so people can catch up with you there.
Great.
And I look forward to, yeah, continuing the journey with you.
Yay, you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you. I am so grateful that you chose to listen to this episode of Unraveling today. If you enjoyed this conversation and want to make sure you never ever miss an episode, then please subscribe on your favourite podcast platform. And if you want to get in touch with me, then the best place to do so is on Instagram at laurenbarber.co or through my website www.laurenbarber.co. And if you haven't already, make sure you sign up to my emails, which also gives you access to a free library of meditations, workbooks, yoga nidra practices, and other tools of transformation. Until next time, keep trusting the beautifully chaotic process of unraveling.